Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to be a good mentor and a good coach and a good father, drink from the fire hose. Choke yourself on life's experiences. Go out and fucking find them. Like Eldridge says, you know, fight the wars, fight the battles, be the knight in shining armor, ride over the hill.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio. There are almost as many ways to raise kids as there are strength programs. And as with training, everything works. It's just a matter of how well does it work. And that is the real question. How is your parenting programming working? Find out how to build a resilient human that kicks in life's closed doors today. Here it is, episode 620.
Hey, Power Athlete Nation. Summer is weeks away. And you got to get that body right. Now, whether it's to pack on a little bit of muscle to fill out those pants and fill out that t-shirt, or to lean out and show off those abs by popping off that shirt, we got you covered. Now, the reason we like to start busting our ass now is so that we have a little bit of margin of error so that you can cut loose and not feel guilty. So what I want you to do is go check out one of Power Athlete's nutrition protocols. We got a leaning, we got a bulking, we got a keto, and we also have a performance protocol for those of you that need a little bit of extra attention or really trying to dial it in so that you look like $1 million come summer.
To learn more, head to powerathletehq.com/nutrition to find out which protocol is right for you. And we're going to give you an extra 20% off at checkout with the code EATTHEWEEK.
20%?
Yeah, that's all caps, EATTHEWEAK at checkout.
Dude, sounds good to me. Now you got your mission. You know what we're expecting. Go get it. See ya. Speaking of Father's Day, I think you've invited me. I'm really proud to be a guest on Power Athlete Radio, and thanks for inviting me for our Father's Day edition of Power Athlete Radio.
Friend of the podcast, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We used to do this a few times with Luke, and I thought it was always cool and an opportunity to bring it back. I recently picked up, again, one of your previous book recommendations for me back in 2017.
Yeah.
So here we are 5 years later.
What's the
diving back in?
What's the release date on that? Because I'm going with like 2001, 2003 area when I read it. It might even been 2000.
For those of you listening and not watching on Spotify or YouTube, whoa, this is The Wild at Heart, Discovering the Secret of a Man's Soul by John Eldridge.
Mm-hmm.
And we are looking at 1993.
Okay. Yeah. So this would have been, I would have been given this book around 2001, 2002, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And Kevin Elko gave it to me, actually. And it's got, it's written with Christian undertones, overtones, however you want to do it, with a definitely an element of Christianity, but also really kind of an interesting read. And I'm now that you pulled that out and I saw it sitting there, I realized we probably need to reread it into this present climate that we see in 2022.
Well, that's part of this, man. So and ironically or destinally, the section in which I read last night, where does masculinity come from?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, like, dude, I know we scheduled this podcast. I had no plan, but then I read this. Now I have a plan. I got to bring this in.
I thought the plan was just welcome me to the podcast, ask me one question, let me rant for an hour, and then click off. Isn't that our standard, Emma?
No, I got three questions.
Mm. God damn it, I love you.
So, where does masculinity come from? I'm going to read a passage from the book and then lead into the questions once we pick this up and then put it down. So, from John Eldridge here, in order to understand a wound, you must understand the central truth of a boy's journey to manhood. Masculinity is bestowed. A boy learns who he is and what he's got from a man or a company of men. The plan from the beginning of time was that his father would lay the foundation for a young boy's heart and pass on to him that essential knowledge and confidence in his strength. Dad would be the first man in his life and forever the most important man.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's still as powerful a statement in 2022 as when I read it, you know, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy listening to that quote and actually remembering it, kind of being in this weird twilight of, obviously being a son, but also being a father. So it's a really strange kind of like, and I know people would love this analogy because I've probably never given this version of the analogy, but when we went to Japan and had those samurai swords made, the reason that the swords were so unique was it was the first time within the Fujiwara clan and their, thousand plus year, family business of creating, swords for the Japanese, for the samurai and also for the royal family. They had never had an instance where all three generations had worked on a single sword. So for these swords, because I think they made us wait so long, they decided to actually involve three generations of sword makers, or maybe it had never worked out where the grandfather was still alive and the other son and the father and everybody were still actively working. So for Rick and I swords, and I have the katana and Rick's got the Wasashi, the shorter sword, the benching set. They did this three generation sword and it was kind of a legendary deal. And even what's interesting is that you can find it on the internet where people are like, ooh, we heard that the Fujiwara clan is going to make a three generation sword. So they made three. One's in a monastery in northern Japan. I have one, and Rick has one. But what was interesting was the reverence of meeting the grandfather, the father, and the son, and them talking about like each coming together based upon their own strength. So the grandfather did the engraving. The youngest son did the hammering. And the father did the polishing and the sharpening. And also, I think, the hamen, which is when they do it so it has the flow. And then they each like split like the handle and this, and like they basically divided the sword into whatever their greatest strength was to create the, these exceptional versions. So that's an interesting, metaphor for this, where you're, as a father, you have this like past and present. So you have like your father, and then you have obviously your son. And as a dad, you have to decide to either, extend traditions or this is how I was raised. And I really like, I hate that cop out. We're here, people be like, well, that's not how I was raised. Yeah, but times are different. When my dad went to school, they took the bus everywhere. He bought his first car for $50. I mean, the perspective, a tank of gas was $5 or 5 cents. I mean, so like the time and the excuse of that's not how I was raised doesn't apply. So, what's cool is my dad was super influential in my life, as you guys have known if you've ever listened to this podcast. So to have a lot of the, not only the messages, but really my dad was, teach by example, this is what I do. And we just learned a lot about work ethic and integrity and honesty and just doing what you say you're going to do from my dad. And then you have, his set of influences influencing me. And then I have this entire other life to lead where I get to keep him abreast of everything that's going on. And he gives me his perspective. And there were certain things, that I think when I reached out to him to ask his opinion, he didn't have the perspective to give me the advice I needed because he hadn't lived that life. I mean, as a professional football player, unless he had played football and done that job, that's why I think a lot of kids, like let's say John Daniel Runyon, you know, has his dad, John Runyon, who, you know, my former teammate, now he plays in the NFL. Any question that he has about anything, you know, pertaining to that business, you know, playing whatever, it's really easy to, hey, dad, like I'm going through this problem or have this, or what do you think about this? He's able to give him perspective because his dad's done that. You know, for me, you know, I was doing something completely different than my brothers. You know, my other brother, criminal defense attorney, followed in the steps of my dad. You know, they had a ton of relationship in terms of like things to talk about. But my dad was such an incredible mentor for my brother. So there were times where I made mistakes and I did things that were impetuous that when I asked my dad's opinion, I don't think he felt that he could guide me as it was needed. And there were only things after the fact where he's like, yeah, I thought that was a bad decision or you shouldn't have done this or this. And I was like, well, where were you? And he's like, I didn't have the breadth of knowledge and I didn't have the arrogance to try to insert myself into it. Mm-hmm. So I think for my dad being really intelligent, he was, you know, I think intelligence is really interesting because we see it within this country, within this present climate. The dumbest people seem to have the biggest skill set and talk the loudest, whereas the most intelligent people realize their limitations where they end and begin and don't engage in it. Like, you know, I mean, it's amazing to hear all the dumbest people on social media are all, you know, constitutional experts and, you know, historical, you know, constitution, you know, like, you know, like have a deep understanding of studying the Constitution with history and this and, you know, understand. Like, first of all, yeah, they don't. I mean, come on. Like the amount of constitutional historians that I've met, there's like, a, you know, I mean, it's few and far between. So it's an interesting thing. And I think what I've done is I've spent a life trying to create the most diverse existence possible and pick up the most amount of skill sets so that whether, you know, whatever comes at us, I can be the person, you know, a guide for my children. You know, there's, you know, having, you know, obviously, you know, gone to Berkeley, you know, done multiple different things, played in the NFL, been an entrepreneur, started a business. This, I mean, you know, like the, just trying to expand the catalog on who I am so that I become a better mentor, a better leader, and more importantly, be able to give my kids interesting and meaningful pointed advice when the time arises. I'll just give you an example. So Jamie just got done doing basketball camp. At basketball camp, some kid smacked her on the butt, told her she was hot. She's 10. Boy. And she was kind of shocked and didn't know what to do. And so she came home. I told her, I'm like, hey, here's the deal. If somebody like says something to you, your words are way stronger than theirs. You have my permission to defend yourself. If somebody puts their hands on you, now we get into a different thing. I want you to open hand slap him or punch him in the face. And Kate's like, what about a shot to the nuts? I'm like, I've been had many people try to kick me in the groin on numerous occasions. It's very difficult because if you got a little bit of adductor, it's going to be a lot of glancing blows. You got to be very strategic in how you do it. So either open hand slap to the face, or I want you to literally smash him as hard as you can in the face with an open hand. And so we worked on a little bit. That boy didn't do anything to her, but he did it to another girl and he was saying some like inappropriate things. So I asked her what she did. She's like, if you did it to me, I was going to smash him. My friend didn't do anything. So I went and told the camp counselor and they're going to remove the boy. And I was like, yeah, here's the problem. If a kid at 10 years old is exhibiting these behaviors, like one, his parents need to know. Two, he's not been mentored to be a gentleman. Like there's an interesting way in, you know, especially having daughters, like I think women learn how men should treat them based upon how their father treats their mother. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my wife and I, before we got married, we had a very interesting mutual discussion where I told her, I'm like, you know, passion, all the other things are all important. But at the end of the day, talking to my dad, and this was an interesting thing that my dad, piece that my dad gave me. So early on when he retired, or so my dad was a DA when he was a young lawyer. Got out of the DA's department. He did some family law for a little and he did some divorces. And he actually told me he got into the nasty murder one stuff and all that real high profile stuff because it wasn't as ugly as dealing with family law and divorces. He's like, it's a lot easier to represent a dude that's killed 10 people than it is to, you know, like, at least there it's cut and dry and you can present the case and then this. But I mean, when you get into this divorce stuff, it's extremely dirty. And when I asked him, like, going through the divorce, was there anything universal that you saw that allowed people to, like, continue to be married? Because my parents are married, what, like 55 years. Like, what was the element opposed from when you saw these nasty divorces? And he said, looks fade. After a while, your wife doesn't think you're funny anymore. So humor fades. You know, money goes up and down. He went through all these things. He said the only thing that he has ever found that allows a marriage to extend for a long period of time is mutual respect. So what he noticed in the divorces is when the end of the husband and the wife lost respect for each other, all of a sudden it ended and it got ugly. Even on the divorces where I still respect this person, we don't work anywhere, the divorce and the separation was extremely amicable. People paid the money, shook hands and went their separate way, or they cohabitated with having children. You know, they were able to raise children, you know, being separated. And he's like, when respect goes, that's when things just fall away. So before I got married, my wife and I had a good conversation. We're like, you know, at the end of the day, I'll never do anything to disrespect you. Please don't ever talk to me in a way that's disrespectful. And I will always, you know, like, I'll always support you. And like, we just had a really interesting thing. And the analogy I gave was respect's a lot like a dinner plate. If you shatter it into a million pieces, you can maybe glue it back together, but you're going to see the cracks and you're going to see the missing pieces and it's never going to be the same. So I want you to treat the relationship and the respect. I'll treat it like a china plate. So that little side bit, that's how my wife and I have been married for 10 plus years. And I think we have a solid relationship based upon mutual respect. And the kids see that. They know, you know, how I treat their mother. They know how I treat them. And that should be what they should expect from men. And part of the problem that I've explained to the girls is that the way that the image that I'm providing for them is maybe not the image that will be taken forward, but it's the image they should always strive for. So, you know, you should think about all these different skills when you meet people and whether or not they compare. And at the end of the day, the only real example you're going to have for when you meet boys is how your father treated your mother and how I treated you guys. So that's how you should aim to be treated. So I think that's a really interesting piece in terms of raising daughters, is because they're going to end up with interactions with men and they have to be smart.
Well, not only smart, and this leads me to my first question, they have to be confident. Mm-hmm. So essentially a two-parter here, and it's almost like a raising a girl's perspective and then raising a boy's perspective. Handing off the confidence, showing Jamie how she should act in that moment. But then there's, giving her the confidence to execute.
Yeah.
So this is part one. So raising the girls to not only teaching them what to do, but then how do you then raise them up to execute when the conflict or the challenge presents itself?
I think I told you the story about when I got in a fight, my mom came down and said, hey, you know, if you're going to fight, you better win, because if you lose, you can't come home. I told my daughter a little bit different. And I told her, I'm like, here's the deal. I'm never going to be upset at you for defending yourself. If something happens and this is what goes down, I trust your judgment. You're not a bully. You're not an asshole kid. Somebody puts their hands on you or does something, I want you to fight like the third monkey. Hence the training program, we have third monkey, and where the joke comes from. You got to fight like your third monkey, and it just started raining. At which point, when it ends, I want you to go get your phone. I want you to call your father, aka me, and I want you to like call me on the phone or text me 911. I need you or whatever it is, and I will be wherever you are. Like if it takes 40 minutes, I'll be there in 10 because I'm the fucking wolf, and I will show up, and I will bring with me fucking unholy god hell of fucking fury down on those individuals and anybody else. Any other parent wants to show up, whether it's a fucking lawsuit, a fight, I don't give a shit what it is. We'll be fucking armed to the teeth. That is the support that they need to know at all times that, you know what, like you are my biggest concern. I will back you 100% and then we'll figure out when the dust settles. And I tell them all the time, like I am, one of the ones I got from China Cho's dad, Papa Cho, who's not with us anymore, rest in peace, who, when I found out I was having twin daughters, I reached out to him and we had some amazing conversations. And, I don't know if China and Freddie know, Maybe they do. How much I talked to the, her dad about this, but like, because China and her sisters were always strong girls, and I liked how they were, and like extremely confident and take on the world and didn't take shit from anybody. Mm-hmm. And he raised them that way, but also he raised them. And the big one he said is, I want you to talk about them going to college. The idea that like, when you get out in the world, this is what you're going to need to be, that one day I won't be here and I got to prepare you for it. And so with my daughters, I tell them all the time, I'm so excited to see who you grow up to be. I'm so excited to see you guys to grow up into strong, competent, intelligent women. And it's going to be difficult to navigate. Life isn't easy and you don't want it easy, but you need to be strong enough to be able to move through this. And you're going to meet friends. You're going to, you know, friends are going to become enemies. Enemies are going to become friends. Like, it's such an interesting world to navigate. But as long as you know that you have people on your team, one, your mother is, Kate's like superwoman for those kids. I mean, dude, she like her level of detail and execution and just the way she manages those kids, like in comparison to how I was raised, we were raised like stray dogs. Like, that's the only way I can describe it. And so I tell them, I'm like, you know, your mom, like, I've never seen anything like this, like the way she is. Be very thankful. And when you get out in the real world on your own, you'll realize the support and the example that your mother has provided, but also the support that you have from us. But at the end of the day, with great responsibility is support, there's great expectation for achievement. You guys are given every opportunity. Anything less than, you know, a home run, like, I, you know, I don't mean to put expectation on you, but I think we're so in this thing of like, oh, don't expect me. Fuck that. You're given this opportunity. You're expected to do well. Like, I got a scholarship to go to Cal. It wasn't, oh, it's fine. He got to go to Berkeley. No, I was expected to get a degree. I was expected to be a good football player. And that expectation was important. Were those pressures put on me by my parents? No. But I saw their example. These are the things they did. You know, Kate went to North Carolina, has her MBA, master's. You know, we went to Berkeley and did all this. I mean, you know, if you look at her uncles, her aunts, you know, Eddie's a lawyer, Rob, you know, this. I mean, you know, my brother's kicking ass and doing his, you know, insurance firm, and like, everybody's successful. I mean, you know, Luke, my nephew, is pretty much like set the bar in terms of like academics. I mean, Al, my niece, super smart, same deal. So like, everybody in her family has been a very high achiever for a long time. So like, that's where she comes from. These are the expectations. You know, Killy, the same thing. I'm just using Jamie as a focus. You know, Killy's in an interesting deal because she rides horses, and the horse moms and the horse girls and the dynamics of that are really interesting. Because she's used to having her sister and her mom, and then she's dealing with these girls that are of different ages.
And act differently, yeah. Right? Maybe put some emphasis on some drama or talking negatively about other people for conversation versus, you know, cool interactions that I've experienced at the dinner table with the family, you know, related to stories or things going on, activities. Yeah, so a different experience, I imagine.
The other thing, too, is there's definite like historical precedents for keeping your kids connected to your family. So like, there's a big one of like, you know, like, especially when we went through all of the like historical stuff for, you know, Killy's, genealogy deal, but like being able to tell, you know, talk to them about the family and like, you know, these were people that came before you and these are the hardships they had. And I think we're so disconnected from our heritage. So like being able to talk to the kids, it was funny, like we were watching the Vikings thing and I'm like, this is where, you know, our family's from Denmark. Like, this is where these people were coming from. Also, our family is from England. And, you know, so we were like watching this. And I think that like historical perspective, and they were like, those people sailed on boats and killed people with axes. I'm like, that was what, yeah, by the, you know, millions. And so like them talking about the hardship and like, dude, those people just had no future. They got on a boat and just sailed hoping to find something. So like now we're in a different times, but like, you know, that's still the ethos of humanity. And this is who we are at our basic. And I think understanding that, but also the big thing too on the non-negotiables for us is they have to read. Jamie reads like, you know, feverishly. Killy is really picked it up too. And the one thing that I will never bitch about buying is books. So if they want a book and they come over, I won't let them read on their computers. I don't want them to get a Kindle or read on their phones. They have to learn to read the love of moving pages. And so Killy just wanted this like really interesting book set on like the Vietnam War. It was like 20
very
books.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I go through Alpris and I buy it used. And then what happens is when they read all the books, we box them back up and send, you know, and sell them on Alvarez again.
I am a child of divorce. So the opportunity I had to connect with my dad was through sports and reading. So you get Tuesday nights and every other weekend. It fucking sucks, but that's what you got. So you spent the most. So bookstore on Tuesday, sporting events, Astros games. On the weekends, monster trucks, all the fun stuff. But yeah, through reading. So then the expectation is I got a week to finish this book so I can have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
Then it was, Treasure Island, Count of Monte Cristo. So eventually leading to his favorites,
yeah,
which is cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, reading the classics, the reason they're the classics is they'll always be the classics. Growing up is a weird dynamic in that my dad worked a ton, like 80 hours a week. So he would wake up like 3 or 4 in the morning, be out of the house by 5 or 6 because court started at 8. And he might have to be downtown and this and then the office. And then he worked late because he, you know, was a lawyer and he traveled through all the courts. And so really it was Saturday and Sunday when we get to see him. But then it was like 6 a.m. banging on the windows for us to wash all the cars. We washed every car every Saturday morning. And if we did a good job, he would probably take us to breakfast. If not, he didn't feed us. But then there was like, you know, just a ton of work to be done around our house. And we were, you know, the unpaid labor. So, and then Sunday, we either get up for church. And if we didn't get up, we would be admonished for the entire day about how God knows that we don't go to church and that nice Catholic guilt. But if we did good, you know, so it was just an interesting dynamic. But for my kids,
so now for the cash side of things, so a little different.
So the hard thing with Cashy, and this is like, he is such a nice, sweet kid. Like I was kind of a little asshole, but I also grew up with two older brothers. I didn't necessarily like I don't remember, you know, my parents hugging me. I was always up to no good. There was always trouble. Like I was always trying to chase my brothers. Like the most dangerous thing I could do, like let's get on the roof and jump off. You know, like, I mean, dude, we were.
So I got another quote here from Wild at Heart. And I related to this one. I wasn't mean. I wasn't evil. I was nice. And let me tell you, a hesitant man is the last thing in the world a woman needs. She needs a lover and a warrior, not a really nice guy.
I don't know. Well, one, I've never been accused of being a nice guy. I've been probably accused of being a good dude, not a fucking asshole, but like, I don't know. I mean, who knows? I mean, I'd have to ask a bunch of people, but like, I've had a lot of people be like, wow, I'm actually thoroughly surprised that, you know, I mean, but like, oh, he's a good guy. No, I was fucking never been a nice guy. So, but, Cashy's a really sweet kid. He was big on hugs. He's a very good kid. And, maybe it's not growing up with older brothers. I tell them all the time, I'm so sad, you know, I'm an older brother. But you know, maybe sisters, whatever, but like, he's like watching him out at camp, like he's real concerned with like helping all the kids and making sure everybody's doing fine. And he's just like a good kid. Whereas for me, I would have been like trying to kick people in the back and steal the ball from them. Like I would have been over there trying, like just fucking causing mayhem. And he's just a good kid.
And so a lesser man, I'll say that, a lesser man would see that as a bad thing and negative and try to push some evil into that heart.
No, I think.
Well, you know some parents that happen to also be coaches of youth sports that you can imagine act the same way.
Well, there's this idea that, you know, like I think how do I put this? Like, I think we've destroyed a lot of eggs and cracked a lot of eggs, and you know, under the idea that, you know, you're going to somehow have to make people into somebody they're not. I think what you do is you provide example, you provide opportunity, and you provide guidance, and you let people grow into who they are. It's probably a lot like a tree, right? You plant it, you feed it, you water it. You know, you prune it, you make sure that it's growing there. When the wind grows, if it falls over, you put a stake. I mean, you support it in such a way so that it can continue to grow and grow deep roots. And I think what happens for a lot of these parents is they're constantly digging it up, moving the tree, doing this. I mean, and I think really what it does is it's not necessarily comes from a malicious standpoint. I just think a lot of parents, one, they don't train and lift weights. And I think we learn a lot of daily fucking lessons that way. The other one is, I don't know if they've ever really accomplished anything of magnitude. You know, it's pretty interesting to talk to all these fathers talking about football and realizing that their football probably experience ended before high school even ended. And so they're imagining themselves 30 years in the past. And I'm like, dude, I did this job. I mean, we can go to the Hall of Fame and I'll point all the guys on the that I got tick marks against. So it's a little bit different perspective for me, you know, and, you know, constantly testing ourselves in different ways. So it's a like a different level of confidence. And I, you know, who knows if I'm right or wrong, especially with my own son. But you know what? You got to provide him the opportunity. And at the end of the day, maybe boys are a little bit different than girls. Whereas Cashy's maybe just the last kid, and he's just extremely he's just a nice kid, and he listens. You know, I mean, he's 6 years old. I mean, he's very just he's a nice kid, and I don't mean that in a negative way. He's just he's just a good kid. He's got a really good heart, and he's not a fucking asshole. And I probably was a lot more of an asshole when I was 6 years old than he was.
So you've touched on this, but the second question I have, and this is a big one, based off some conversations, were you aiming to get the girls to try different sports, to try to find something that they enjoy? But this is a big thing, is helping your kiddos, son or not, find purpose. And to use a quote here, from Wild at Heart is our theme, but don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, because what the world needs are men who come alive. And this is a conversation I had with the high school athletes that I'm coaching, whether it's lacrosse or not. And like when they're talking about looking for schools and colleges, I'm like, well, like what passion do you have right now?
Man, it's so hard
to help them.
It's so hard to define at that age.
I know, I want them thinking about it. I'm not expecting an answer, John. I just want them to think, like, what gives you goosebumps at this moment?
It's so interesting how things play out. And I think the quote that Greg Glassman threw me all those years ago, people fail at the margins of their experience. So that little piece that he said to me many, many years ago has forced me to increase my margin. So that's why I'm always fighting for more margin. I don't want to fail at the margins of my experience. So I'm going to increase my experiences so that my margin is really deep or really dense or really far. So I think the one thing that I don't fail at is I know my perception of school. Let's give you an example. I didn't get straight A's, but I did well, but the amount of work that I did was zero. So I was extremely unmotivated and like nothing was exciting and passionate in school because of the way we were taught. Actually, my favorite class was ceramics. So I used to be able to go and throw pots and make all this stuff because it was creative and it was fun and it was ever changing. It was challenging and I was forced. So what I didn't like about school was that I felt like if there were 30 people in the class was taught to the bottom third, the middle third was fine, kind of fine. And then the top people were just kind of like blowing bubbles. And so we would go into stuff. I'd sit down and, I never felt like I was outside my comfort zone. Everything was like, oh, it's easy. Now I'll bang this out. My mom's like, yeah, homework. I'm like, I did it in class. You know, like it was just easy. And, because of that, because when I wasn't challenged, it's not as if like today I'd be like, well, it's easy. I'm going to fucking get 100 on everything. I just didn't, you know, well, it's easy. You know, 80 is fine. 85, 90. I'm not going to do the extra work to push it over the top because what's the difference? Training for football was different because like we were talking about with Colin O'Brady, where his mom's like, I want you to set a goal, whatever. I am more the type of person, you suck. You will never do this. You'll never amount to shit. That's the type of stuff that I hear. Like somebody like, you won't do this or I'm better than you, whatever. Fuck no. Like that's like completely different where his mom instilled him in this. I was out there trying to prove a whole bunch of people who didn't believe in me wrong. Like I was just saw this deal. Jennifer Lopez accepted some lifetime achievement award for the MTV Music Awards or something. And she thanked her haters. She's like, thank you for all the people that never thought I could do this and were always against me. You are the reason that I was able to be successful. And I think for a lot of times that was me. And
you hate J-Lo?
Oh yeah, I'm not a J-Lo fan.
I'm a big fan, especially your Super Bowl halftime.
Yeah, Jenny from Around the Block or whatever it is. I mean, I liked her when she was a fly girl on in Living LA. Color. In Living Color which I don't know if you remember in Living Colors.
No, I'm thinking of Paula Abdul's Lakers, the first Lakers girl.
Yeah.
But
oh, I don't know if she was she was the first, but she was one. So so part of the training I really enjoyed, like the aspect of like training. I really liked going out and imposing my will and playing football. The problem is all of a sudden I go to college and I got a ton of scholarship offers. I go to college and I was kind of a little fish out of water because you're not really a man. You're still kind of a kid, this, and you're kind of trying to figure this stuff out in a freshman year. You're trying to figure this out, you know, like all of a sudden there's like, you know, with girls around, you're in this college environment here. Like, you know, I kind of sunk into this Berkeley thing and I kind of floated in that first year. And it wasn't until like my sophomore year where everything kind of clicked and I knew what I wanted. And I'll tell you this. I mean, I didn't even know 100% what I wanted in school, but I knew that I liked it. I knew that when I showed up, it was extremely demanding. I had to do the work and it was competitive. And therefore, I wanted to do well at it. The football, same thing. Like expected, you know, a lot was expected. So when I got to college, all of a sudden, I was like, oh, shit, this is great. Like, I wish high school was more like this. I would have been more, like, more proficient, just more motivated if I had this level of competition. So when my kids, when we moved here, they went to public school, a lot of the same things that my kids were telling me were the same things that I experienced. Mm-hmm. Like Jamie's like, it's not really very much fun. It's not very, it's kind of easy. I was like, have you read anything? She's like, yeah, I'll like, you know, as the teacher, it's like, I'll get done with stuff and I'll pull out my book and I'll start reading because I get done so quick. And then the teacher yells at me for a reading. And she's like, but it's taking kids 30, 40 minutes to do something that's taking me five. So then I have to sit there. And so like a lot of the same things that I went through and a lot of the narrative that they said, and that's why we ended up going and finding a much more challenging private school where I talked to them, like, I want you to push these kids. Like, they can do it. Like, ask them to do more than you think they can and they'll meet the deal because I know how I was. Mm-hmm. So now they've blossomed to the point where, you know, Jamie's going into fifth grade and they were trying to push her into seventh grade. So they're going to move her up a year and they want Kelly to move up a year. And I was like, just keep them in the same grade. And so they're like, but the work that they did is 2 years ahead of where they were. So, I mean, you know, now they've kind of closed the gap where they probably can't even go back to public school just because the stuff is so advanced, which at the end of the day is what I want. Mm-hmm. I want them to be challenged. I want them to feel like they're, you know, like the water's deep and they got to tread hard. They can't just keep crunching down and pushing down. With sports, you know, sports was my vehicle to get to college and, you know, obviously my vehicle for success. It doesn't mean that it has to be my kid's vehicle. They right. can do other things. So I think a lot of times parents are like, well, this is what I did. This is what you need to do. But what I want them to do is I want them to gain, what's the term at Sornix? Physical culture.
Right.
So I want them to understand like the theme of physical culture. And I want them to ingrain that into their daily routine the same way it is for Kate and I and our family. That like hard work, working out, like whether it be, you know, cutting down logs, stacking this, doing all the stuff around here, it's training in the gym. Like there's an element of hard work that's part of who you are. There's a physical culture that you are a part of and that you're indoctrinated into. I mean, I was kind of thinking like, you know, if Summer Strong still continues, is there a point where the girls are like 16 or 17 and we take them to Summer Strong?
Oh, I've met a lot of fathers and sons. So fathers that found us across the football seminar, and here we are 5, 6, 7 years later. And then they're bringing their kids yeah. and introducing
yeah.
like, hey, this is Coach. And then that's how they would know me from years ago. And now their sons are teenage age and, you know,
yeah, I mean,
empower them. It's good.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love for those girls to show up and pull a deadlift off of the, you know, for the deadlift party. So like that, mm-hmm. that type of physical culture and realizing that there was a whole bunch of people that fit within this physical culture that might not necessarily be people that you're around, but this is your community. These are our friends. And what's wild is the amount of times that people have come over and they've met people, and then I have to explain to them who that person is later on. That's and I'm like, you know, that guy, like Cal Dietz comes over, right? And you know, I'll use Cal. I'm like, he's probably one of the smartest strength coaches I've ever met. You know, think about you know, Craig Buehler or you know Tom Inkledon or you know Rudy Reyes or you know Adam Nelson or Derek Woodsky or Bert Soren. I mean, you know, any of the people. You know, I'm just thinking some of the people that came over for dinner for our symposium stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're looking at, you know, gold medals and just, you know, titans of industry and some amazing individuals. And to tell the kids that some of the brightest and the best, you know, are, you know, are friends of ours, and we consider allies in this physical culture. So being an instill that, you know, like, Kelly's good at riding. The reason she's good at riding is because she's good at gymnastics and she's dramatically stronger than all the other girls. Mm-hmm. She also works on her handstand walks and her cartwheels probably 100 to 200 times a day. Like, kids came over to swim yesterday. She was outside, practicing her hurdles because we haven't got her to a track team yet, but, and she works on her handstands and her cartwheels like every free moment. And it just blows me away. One day when we were on the trip, I counted, she practiced 100 times within a single day of like trying to get her handstand hold, working on her tumbling, working on her layouts. I mean, we're on the beach and all she's doing is running, you know, doing, trying to work on her layouts. So, she got bit by the bug and Jamie's been up there training, you know, and Cassie's 6. So, I mean, people learn by example. They watch and they learn, and they see what's important. And, you know, like, you know, hey, we, you know, and that's why I've always said, if you want your kids to be in good shape, you want your kids to be physical culture, put a gym in the garage. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was Greg Glassman's deal. Move your car out, put weights in there, and let your kids come in and watch you train and watch you earn their dying. That'll teach them something.
Yeah. And in line with the Sorenex idea, inviting all these people into your home and introducing them to your family. And going back to what you said earlier about high school, where school academics necessarily wasn't challenging, you found a way through sport to then get that challenge. So similarly, like the parents split, so then leaned on my team, sports, athletics, weightlifting, to then be the company of men, going back to our Eldridge quote here, to help essentially be that model, the figure. We're working together towards something we are developing as young men. So it was a company of men for me. And then in college, yeah, like that, and you've met my good college buddies, and they essentially like claim that they developed me as a man and then handed me off to you and Luke to continue to grow, because what they received was
I think they said is they nurtured you to manhood, as yeah, I think was the direct quote. But you know, you know, things like Boy Scouts, things like Cub Scouts, I mean, all of these things are designed in such a way, to help boys in this maturation process. You know, we did all that stuff. You know, like, did it help me return to a man? Not really, but you know, I remember the interactions I had with my dad. You know, I remember my dad showing up and us going to Indian Guides, and you know, I mean, we always joked, I think our tribe,
we blows.
No, we were the Kickapoos, which I thought was the best one. I remember we picked the name, like we could pick any name. We're like, we want to be the Kickapoos. We just want to kick poo around. And that was a real name. But like that stuff was fun. You know, like, so for Father's Day coming up, Kate has and Killy have a horse show. And then Jamie is going, she gets dropped off. She's doing a week long sleepaway camp for swim at UT. So I drop her off in the morning. Kate's doing that. And it's me and Cashy. I'm like, what do you want to do? He says the same thing every day. Go to High Five. I'm like, no, we're going fishing. So
sweet.
My buddy Amin's got a big property up in Kingsland and he has a huge pond that he built and he stocked it. So it's the most fun place to fish because you just throw your hook in without even bait and the fish jump on you, reel them in, and they're monsters. So we're going to go up there and I'll take him fishing. And he's like, Dad, what do you want to do? I'm like, I want to take you fishing. Because some of my best memories growing up involved my brothers and my dad fishing, to the point where, like, I've still told you this, like when we finish this creek and I stock it, like I'm going to put the laptop out there and we're going to fish on Fridays, because my best day, not, or my worst day fishing is still better than any other day I've had. And the kids are like, we just watched the poles. I'm like, yes, this is better than, I mean, it's almost as good as, like, catching fish is great. Fishing is great too. So that fishing part was important, but, other than, you know, like lifting weights, wrenching on cars, you know, eating pizza or, you know, drinking beer and, you know, shooting guns, you know, killing something, you know, fishing, you know, like driving fast. I mean, all the things I've enjoyed to do in my life. It's also fun too for a son. Like, this is another one I think about, like, you know, I think I've told the story in here before, and I know I've told it to you. I was living in Tampa. Roth was my roommate, and it was right before Lent. So it was in, like, I want to say like February. And so Roth hits me up. He's like, hey, we got to go to confession because Lent's coming and we can't take communion, you know, kind of a deal. So we go. I hadn't been to confession in years. So Roth goes in first. I go in next. And I had this feeling. I'm like, I'm going to be as honest as I can and tell all the priests everything bad I've done. I got a lot. So I go in there and I, forgive me, Father. I've sinned extensively. And he was like, and I was like, and he just put up his hand. He's like, I don't need to hear the blow of the dirty details. Are you sorry? And I was like, not really. I was like, you know, like, and then he asked, like, do you want absolution? And I was like, probably not, because I'm just going to go do it again. And he like, he kind of chuckled. And he's like, well, you know what? Like, you know, there's only been one perfect person on the planet, and that was Jesus, and you got an all deal. But he asked me, he goes, I want you to think about something when going forward. I want you to think about, be the type of person you want to bring into your life. So when you see, like, you know, let's say you're out like hanging out with girls or this, and you look around for the people, are these the type of people that you want to bring into your life? Like, is this the representation? Because there's a, you know, the individuals and the people we're around are a great reflection of who you are. And if you find yourself, you know, maybe not in the best of situations, is it the situation or is that the reflection you're giving off? So I want you to think about that. And that was an extremely pivotal point in my life when I realized that, you know what, like the way that I was and the perception I was giving off, like that was a real deal. And if I wanted people to view me in a better way and I wanted to, you know, one day be a father and a husband and, you know, a business owner and actually have some credibility and a little bit of integrity, like that was the type of person I needed to be, not just, you know, run around with my hair on fire, you know, trying to fucking slay every mountain I could. And that was just a pivotal point where I realized, like, fuck, I got to tighten my shit up. You know, and if I want to effectively surround myself with better people and be a better person, I got to start with myself. And that was extremely pivotal for me, that moment going forward. And yeah, I mean, so that one was good. But I mean, you know, if the guy had just been like, if I had said, yeah, you know, I'm sorry, give me absolution. Okay. You know, said 27 Hail Marys and
27, you know, he's going easy.
Yeah. And 100 Our Fathers and, you know, call it a day. And what's funny is he didn't even ask me to say Hail Marys or Our Fathers. He just was like, I want you to think about, be the type of person you want to bring into your life, you know, and that might be a live, laugh, love quote, you know, you got on your wall, live, laugh, eat, love. But that was impactful for me. So as a father and as a husband, I think about it more often than I should. Am I the type of person that I want to attract? And what do I want for my kids? What kind of life do I want? What example? I want my daughters to grow up. And if the view of their father is be like, wow, my dad was an absolute crazy person. Like the amount of stuff he handled in this, I mean, like he was intelligent. He could, you know, he was all the things we hope for, you know, a scholar, you know, an orator, you know, an athlete and all these other things. And he was, you know, a big, strong dude, larger than life. You know, like the kids tell, like, dude, people come from all over the world for my dad to test, you know, they think the block one is hilarious. I mean, but that's a cool thing. Mm-hmm. And the environment that they, you know, we've created, I want them to have this feeling, like a bigger than life feeling, so that when they go out and they meet people, that's the expectation that they have. And they don't settle for just, you know, the 12-year-old kid next door, Charlie Manson's them into a relationship. Like, I want them to have a bigger than life. I want them to have a big, big North Star. And I want them to feel that, you know, that with, you know, great opportunity, great expectation. And I want them to go out. And I tell them this all the time. I'm like, I want you guys to go out and, you know, fight battles, you know, love lost, love won. I want you to experience everything. I want you to travel and see the world. I want you to see the, you know, world or the sun come up on the wrong side of the world. I want you to have all these experiences. I want you to come home and tell me about them. I'd love to be there with you, but I'm not going to get to be there on all of them. As we were sitting there listening to Colin O'Brady, like, think about the experience. I mean, to see the sun come up over Mount Everest and all of those adventures and to be out here and to be his parents and to have him come over and tell these stories and, like, a big part of you wishes that you were there in that moment with him, but then realizing that, like, this is his quest to lead and I'm just so proud to be part of it and this is what my child's accomplished. And I'm so, you know, and I'm so glad, like I tell my son all the time, the only thing I want for you is to be your father's son. I mean, I've tried my entire life to just be my father's son and be a good dude and to be somebody that my dad was proud of. And I think at the end of the day, if you can do that, I think you've hit the mark and you've done what's been expected of you.
Mm-hmm. And final question or tidbit or antidote. And speaking of Ruiz, like this is an excellent thing because I know y'all are such good friends. And then I've had the opportunity to apprentice and consider him a mentor. How do you find that balance between self-reliance and, you know, fighting your own battles and then leaning into a mentor and a guide, whether it's a father or a father figure?
It's pretty interesting. I had a kind of a deep thought about the idea of mentorship recently. And, you know, there's a weird thing, right? And I think it's very difficult to mentor your own kids. Like, I think as an adult, you, as a parent, you can provide the example. Like, this is who I am. I think it requires other individuals, other men, other women to mentor your children in a little, you know, in a positive way. You know, I can think of like, you know, Kathy at the barn, right? So next door, you know, Kathy's told me for years, I'm not teaching girls how to ride horses. I'm teaching them how to be young women. Hard work and this. And she's like, the lessons of life I teach from the back of a horse. And she's so good at it. She's like everybody's grandmother. And she's just a really amazing woman. And like, you know, I mean, she's over. I mean, just to be able to manage this, but like honesty and truth and hard work and dude, just the example of how hard that woman works is brings a smile to my face. You know, most mornings when I'm up at 7, she's already out there riding because now when she teaches classes, she teaches privates and people pay her to ride their horses to like break them in and to get them ready. So, I mean, she busts her ass and that's a great example. And, you know, there's a lot of things that pop up at the barn and Kate's constantly like Kate personally trains Kathy. And because she, you know, not only do they trade out, but Kathy, it's good for Kate as well. And she's like, man, Kathy is such a hard worker. And I think that example of Kathy, and what's amazing is all the girls who are good girls all really like admire her. And then there's a bunch of girls that don't like her. And that's more a reflection on them and their parents than it is on Kathy. So I think for my son, you know, having other individuals around, you know, cause it's kind of like, he's a little young for it, but like, you know, out there coaching, seeing this other stuff, like having people mentor him and, you know, realizing that you can say everything you want to your kids and they might not hear you. All of a sudden, like somebody they respect who's not you gives them that information and it becomes life changing. You know, I learned from my parents through example. You know, we were, you know, I think we were talking a little bit, with Ronda Rousey's mom about, you know, me going to martial arts when I was little and like the way, you know, like the expectation for that. I was 6 years old and I still remember it. I could still remember the sound of like that dude starch gi when he did all of his moves. It's the same thing when I went out to Mid-South when I did that shooting school with the guys from NSW and all of a sudden the instructors got up and the ease, the ability to seamlessly and effortlessly combine primal movement patterns in terms of using that weapon and putting it on target and as smooth as they were in terms of like drawing this and the transitions and how they moved. It was that same precision that I saw when I was 6 years old from that old Japanese martial artist. And like, I think I have forever observed like, and I think like that this is what's so interesting about power athlete and more importantly, our definition of athleticism and what we've been teaching. And I've said it was like a splinter in my mind. It's been like this for like this is just the evolution of all of these years of thinking of being like, why? And finally having a definition and putting it out there within a training program and allowing people to mature through it and understanding the pieces. But it really came all those years ago. I can still in my mind as I sit here and I get goosebumps thinking about it, listening to that guy's crisp starch gi and, the fluid and the move and the way as seamless and effortlessly as he moved through space. Same thing when I went out to Mid-South and watching those guys shoot, same thing. And I've seen it before in other ways, you know, whether it be martial arts, whether it be in boxing, whether it be in this, I mean, everything, it's what I strive for within football. And that was, you know, you go back to Musashi's Book of Five Rings and Bushido, same deal, that dedication to perfection. You know, think about Tom Cruise's Samurai movie, Last Samurai.
Yeah.
When he's like, so you're telling me savages that have had a singular dedication for over 1,000 years, which is warfare, they're savages, right? Like he makes that comment, you know, they're savages. Yeah. He's like, They've had a singular mindset. They've dedicated their entire lives for 1,000 years to the singular task of warfare. They're going to be pretty good at it. And they were, you know, I mean, those dudes are right, shooting arrows from back of horses. I mean, just like their dedication and expertise is something to behold. And I think that, like, what we've talked about, like, athleticism is symmetry and beauty. And when you see it, you know it. Whereas it's something unexplainable. You know, you turn on the Olympics, you see somebody move. They move in such a way that's so pleasing to the eye that you think, shit, that's really nice. It's really athletic. It's amazing. I mean, we see the clips all the time on Instagram now. So I don't mean to divert, but that idea of mentorship, sorry, I'm down a little rabbit hole, but that idea of mentorship is so important. But then there's another weird problem with that. There's a lot of fucking perverts and weirdos in the world. And your job as a parent is to protect yourself or to protect your children and those around you from weirdos and perverts. And like, you know, all of a sudden you get like, you know, hey, well, they're going to go to a church function. And you know what? Like the Catholic Church has not been good about protecting children. Look at the Boy Scouts. Look at all these organizations. So like there's a really interesting piece with like allowing other people to mentor your children, which also in today's age as a parent is a little bit different. Like when we were kids, shit, I mean, we'd jump 20 kids in a car. There'd be no seatbelts. And like, you know, we'd roll places. Now it's we just live in and I hate when people say we live in a different time, but fucking we do live in a different time. Or are we just more cognizant of it or is this, but you know, I mean, there's, you know, I mean, kids get kidnapped and kids get hurt and there's a lot of weird shit. Like just talking about, the sexual abuse aspect of it. I mean, the amount of girls and maybe these statistics have always been this way, but now there's more front and center that have had something happen to them and the amount of boys that have had something. I mean, shit, we got Rudy Reyes on the podcast, you know, talking about this. I mean, you know, to the point where, you know, I mean, on that podcast, and it goes out saying we love Rudy. Like Rudy is like, I mean, anywhere in the world, if he called us, like, we'd fucking be there for him. And so would a lot of other of our friends. And I respect that guy so much. And he's such a beautiful soul. And his wife, Jade, same thing. But I mean, to hear that, you know, at an age when he needed to be protected, somebody wasn't there and he had to be the protector against that shit. Like what that, the visceral response that does in me for him, it makes me angry and mad and fucking want blood, but also give him a hug and be like, hey man, like the Goodwill Hunting, this is not your fault. And I'm so proud of who you've become, but also, that I would never want, I'll never leave my children.
Well, that's
right.
Like
you don't leave your children behind, you know, with divorce and all that thing is weird where all of a sudden parents leave, like I'm not leaving my kids. And well, on top of it, it's our job to be the protector they need because you know what? At this age, something bad happens. It's fucking hard to peel back on that.
Well, the aim is to include yourself and to reference that you're helping out the girls coaching basketball, Cassius football. So you're including yourself in this.
We're at everything.
Exactly. And at the same time, like you aimed in bringing this back to Bob Wellborn, you aimed to include him in your accomplishments. Cal games, he never missed a game.
Yeah.
Professional games. The my dad for including him in college games, flying him out to attend. And then now my team travels to Houston. He's there to watch the games where lacrosse is not known to him, but now he's invested in in understanding the sport. And then we on the phone can talk about the, you know, the communication challenges and present the problems that I now face as a leader and mentor.
Sure.
How can I best handle this? So, you know, I had conflicts with coaches growing up. I don't want that to remain and negatively affect my athlete's experience.
There was a weird transition. I was thinking about this with my dad. There was a really just like, and I remember like it wasn't anything definitive. It just kind of evolved where my dad stopped giving me advice and just started listening and laughing and enjoying what I was telling him.
I'll have to think about that.
So there was like a weird transition and where like, you know, my dad, I'd call up, we'd talk about something and he'd give me like constructive feedback. We'd talk about this and this, and it was kind of like a interesting conversation. And then it just kind of like morphed into like him listening to my stories and just kind of laughing and being entertained or us just giggling and laughing. And there's a great picture when Cash is born, my dad holding him. And he's like laughing hysterically about something. I forgot he cracked a joke. He made something, But like, there wasn't like a moment of like, you know, now you have a son and this, and we was just
cats in the cradle.
Yeah. Like, let's just laugh and have a good time and be who we were. And, there was it was a weird transition where you kind of like, maybe my dad felt like, dude, my kids are growing up. Not that they're growing up, but like they've morphed into somebody who I want to be friends with. And, you know, you take this different position of like a father, a mentor, a leader, a teacher, a coach, you know, a sensei, I mean, whatever it is. And then you get into this thing where you're like, shit, my kids are able-bodied men that have fathered children, you know, lived and did, you know, built this, done, you know, have a skill set I don't have. I mean, they're the type of people where, you know, if my car broke down in East LA and I had to make one phone call, I know they're going to fucking be there like the mom on fire with fucking, you know, guns a-blazing to come fix my tire. So, or my car breaks down, these are the kids that are going to get out and push every time. So that was an interesting realization. And it was funny. I talked to my brother about it. And my brother's like, you know, it was weird. Like when I was a young attorney, dad used to give me, I call him up and he'd give me some of this. And he goes, and at some point we just started kind of talking like old friends, comparing notes on cases. And he's like, I don't know when that happened. I said, is it better or worse? And he's like, neither. It's just the evolution of time. When you realize that, you know, your kids have grown and they've become the men that you've always imagined them. He's like, can you imagine feeling like you didn't do the job you needed? He's like, that's an interesting realization. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people like the pain of regret and the whole deal. If only I'd done this. And, you know,
I got one quote I know you're going to enjoy on that note. The most dangerous, this is again, John Eldridge team. The most dangerous man on earth is the man who is reckoned with his own death. All men die. Few men ever really live.
That is the William Wallace quote. All men, what is it? All men die, but not all men truly live. You know, it's the same deal. You know, do you want to be an old man warm in your bed with taking your last breath? Or do you want to be out here knowing that you died on this for freedom? I mean, that's a William Wallace quote. But there is a very real, you know, time in your life, you know, where you feel that like you've slayed dragons, you've done what you've needed to do, and you've effectively amassed the experience and the honor to bestow that information on your children or those around you in terms of mentorship. So I think my advice for anybody who's a father or, you know, thinking of being a father is experience is by far the greatest teacher. So if you want to have a wide, you know, breadth of experience and just incredible options to be able to paint some really fun pictures for your kids to be able to lead them on this journey, go out and push your own envelope, right? Extend your margin and try to have as many experiences so that you become the person that, you know what, that your child needs when they call. I mean, and I'm sure like, you know, text one day, hopefully you're going to be a father and, you know, it's going to be interesting because you're going to have a, you know, cast of characters to reach out to ask them. And if, you know, and if to this day, if my kids ask me about something, either I know about it or I have one phone call for it.
I have one final quote for you, John.
Lay it on me.
The true test of a man, the beginning of his redemption actually starts when he can no longer rely on what he's used all of his life. The real journey begins when the false self fails, meaning you fail at the margins of your experience and must seek out more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a weird connotation, and I've seen this for years on our programs. Whenever I've always asked people, I hear these questions, and I've always asked them, be like, hey, are you new? And they instantly take offense. I've, you know, and they get all fucking mad. And it's this like weird where I'm like, I'm not trying to offend you. New isn't bad. It just means that you're new. So I know how to, if you've never been around here or this training is new to you, it's a different set of somebody that's been around for a while. So like, it's perspective. It's, you know, there's context to everything. And people take offense. And if somebody goes, are you new? Brand fucking new.
Like they just started a 7-day free trial on powerathletehq.com/training.
Yeah. And I'm like, hey, or have you done this before? Are you new? And they take offense, right? There's people that are just hearing about Power Athlete. You know, I mean, I can't believe there's anybody in the world that doesn't know Power Athlete. But, you know, there's people walking in. There's people that are just learning about Mount Everest and that people climb it. I mean, these, like the world has never been in this. And there's this constant renewable stream. And so I think if you want to be a good mentor and a good coach and a good father, drink from the fire hose. choke yourself on life's experiences. Go out and fucking find them. Like Eldridge says, you know, fight the wars, fight the battles, be the knight in shining armor, ride over the hill. You know, and that was what, you know, having, you know, Bob Sapp and then also Colin O'Brien or Brady on, you know, listening to their experiences as unconventional and something that I had never really thought about. I mean, I never dreamed of walking across Antarctica. All of a sudden I hear him say it and I'm like, fuck, I would have loved to have done that. Who's to say I couldn't do it now? But then I'm thinking like, I'm like in my head, like part of my questions
60
was
days.
My own planning on it. I'm like, what was the food like? How many calories would I need? He was way smaller than me. He needs 7. I probably need like 14. It was just like, and then I was thinking for all those people that are like, oh, I can't lose weight. I'm like, you know what you need to do? Drag a sled across. You just need to drag a sled across Antarctica eating Colin bars and you'll fucking, your watch will fall off. So
Colin bars.
That's what he called them. amazing dude. I am, my goal is to get him in Power Athlete Radio in this podcast room and have an amazing conversation, take him out and get him some beers and we'll go eat some food with him. But yeah, I reached out to him on social. Same thing with Bob Sapp, taking the kids over there and seeing Bob in
all
Thailand.
Future episodes of Power Athlete Radio. Yeah. So let's get some action feedback. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a rating and review. If you've taken anything from this episode, leave us a 5 stars in return. That's all we ask.
And if you have more questions or thoughts or concerns, you can always reach out on the hotline 929-464-464-0. 929-ING-ING-0. And if you want to shoot me an email, if you've been inspired or you want to rap any more about this, you can shoot me an email. Just send it to John at JohnnyWad, JohnnieWad.com or Raven at PowerAthleteHQ. All those will filter back to me.
And if you're looking to be the example within your family and get started with your fitness training nutrition, head to PowerAthleteHQ.com. We got 7-day free trial of all of our training programs. And, I mean, move some dirt, get started. Today, all the old John Wellbornisms.
And if you want to get into the block one, you want to learn the methodology and get into our inner circle, go to academy.powerathletehq.com, check out the methodology in the block one, and really just you can come out here and train with us and see if you got what it takes.
But, and join an excellent company of men using Eldridge and women. I know, yeah. I was just quoting Eldridge, but
no,
yeah.
It's, but yeah. Hey, dude, thanks for having me. It's no, dude, I don't say it lightly. I feel like a lot of times in the podcast, you know, sometimes we get a little on autopilot, you know, having Colin and you know, Bob on recently and doing some of that stuff really just inspired me. And then also to hit me with these questions and the fact that you did me an extreme honor by actually going back and rereading one of my favorite books and pulling questions out. Kudos to you, man. Good work. And I really appreciate it. And thank you for allowing me to waste some time with you today.
Time well spent. What's that quote? It's never time wasted. I don't know.
There, all we have, or it's to, it's Henry Rollins. There is no spare time. There is no free time. There is no extra time. All we got is time, and the clock is ticking. I'll tell you though, you know my favorite Henry Rollins quote is, and I keep it on my phone, which I think is hilarious. I don't know if you guys have ever heard this one, but it's like, go without a coat when it's cold. Find out what cold is. Go hungry. Keep your existence lean, wear away the fat, get down to the lean tissue and see what it's all about. The only time you define your character is when you go without. In terms of hardship, you find out what you're made of and what you're capable of. If you've never tested, you'll never define your character. So kind of a cool quote.
Yeah. I was thinking of
200 pounds is always 200 pounds.
No. Time you enjoy wasting is not wasted time.
Mm. Cool.
All right. Bye.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. A very happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. And stay tuned to next week when we're going to be speaking with fighter Bob Sapp. Until next time, bye!
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.